Hello, America, and all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Chris Logie and Teresa Salmon. Say hi to the good people, folks.
Hello.
Yeah. So, this week's episode is for November 4th, 2023. And I got to tell you, I want this weather to go hurry up and make up its damn mind. It's hot, it's cold, it's hot, it's cold. Pick a lane, damn it. I say hot. It's not really that hot. It's like, it'll be like in the 70s, maybe the low 80s. And then by the time nighttime rolls around, it plummets down into the 40s and 50s. So, yeah, it's just regular old, you know, fall in Georgia, basically. Hot days, cold mornings, and cold nights. That's basically what we have to deal with.
At least, until
you know, winter rolls around, and then it's just nothing but cold. But anyway, so this week, what are we going to be having to discuss? Well, among other things, the ongoing war in Israel that is happening just took a very dark turn. I mean, it was already pretty dark, but this was one where it's like, yeah, this is like the point of no return. And yeah, that we'll be talking about that. The United Auto Workers are reaching a tentative deal with General Motors that, among other things, includes raising the wages of non-union members, which is a pretty big deal. We've also got House Representative George Santos, who is also, you know, basically a criminal and serial liar. He had a vote to expel him from the House this week. We'll tell you what the result was. Pablo Escobar, he's been dead for many years now, but his pets are still roaming Colombia, and they're so much so that now the government of Colombia is going to have to start culling them. We'll tell you about that. And of course, we got a bunch of entertainment related news, including a bunch of new trailers. But yeah, we got all that and more on this week's episode of Let's Weekend. So, start us off, as always, is tradition. We will talk about all the stuff we've been doing that leads up to what we have been doing this week. And as is also tradition, we will start with Chris. Chris, what have you been doing this week?
Well, enjoying these steady weather. We had some snow for the first time. This fall, we got lucky here, not too much. Some other parts of Ohio got a few inches of snow. Mine was just basically like, I had a little bit on the, like my windshields, that I just had to get the heater and that going to melt it, but nothing really outside of that. But, yeah, that was, nice to see. And but we're now like in the 50s mainly, so nothing too bad there. But yeah, for things I've been doing, I've been watching a lot of My Hero Academia. I am in the part where some big shit goes down, things they've been building up for most of the show. I forget what like episode range I'm in like the early 100 range. So enjoying that a lot. Yeah, they had a good series of battles between class 1A and 1B that I enjoyed a lot, and feeling like we should have more focus on 1B in there a bit, because there's some really cool characters there with some wild abilities. The thing I like a lot about this show compared to like an X-Men is that they're not as reliant on like any sort of reality for what abilities that these kids can get, so they just go buck wild with stuff. You know, like this one can just sink into the shadows and zip around them super well, or you know, this guy has all the powers of an orca and he just fucks shit up, all that kind of stuff. And they get to some big stuff. So yeah, that's been fun. And essentially with Deku, they laid out an RPG skill tree for him. And that's kind of what they're working on for for his whole power set. So that's some wild stuff to get. So that's been fun. Let's see. That's pretty much what I've been watching. For games, playing more Spider-Man 2.
Yeah.
I've been enjoying that a lot. It's got more side stuff opening up. Mm-hmm. So that's in there. Get hints of things happening. So that's been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Let's see. More Rocket League. Finish up the Halloween event. That's mm-hmm. over. So just playing more of that. Let's see. Been playing more Suika game.
Mm-hmm.
That's just been the nightly thing I do before bed, playing it on my Switch, and then struggling. It does a good job of wearing out my brain.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been good. And more Euro Truck Simulator 2, as I am driving around the Balkans, the West Balkans,
mm-hmm.
and not been able to get too far south with my jobs, as I'm doing the stuff that fits the event stuff they've got going on. So that's been taking me around in different ways. And I'm trying not to do the super long stuff, as they got plenty of ones that are, you know, would take an hour or two to do, but I'm trying to get the shorter stuff. So that's been a little challenging, finding some good jobs, especially because I'm trying to do the Halloween stuff as well. And those are kind of just going all over Europe. And I do not want to do that. So that's been pretty much what I've been doing there. So Teresa, what have you been doing?
Yeah, Teresa, what about you?
Also Suika game. Also playing it before bed. Also playing it before work to kind of, you know, chill out, get the brain working. Playing it at lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Playing it in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's about how that one's going. And then, you know, of course, Scott and I have been playing co-op in Kingdom Two Crowns a lot. Mm-hmm. We went and saw the Five Nights at Freddy's movie.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't play any of the games, but I had looked into, you know, the whole premise, the whole story of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting, and I don't really know how I feel about the movie itself. It went along pretty good. It wasn't too gross. I thought it was going to be a little, you know, Saw-like, but it was not. And I guess I should have known it wasn't going to be because it's PG-13. But when they finally resolved the main conflict, it happened very abruptly to me, and I was sitting there like, what? This is it? Lame.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was, you know, it was fun. And it was another theater experience, which, you know, since COVID allegedly ended, I haven't done a whole lot of that. So that was pretty cool. And we also got some snow, Chris. It was Halloween day. And I left work early for a doctor's appointment, and it just started snowing so hard. It was like whiteout conditions, but it was gone very quickly. Like it didn't even accumulate more than an inch or anything. So that was fun to see in a way, but it was also, I don't know. It was just a little raw. It just, ugh. I wasn't ready for it, and I should have been, you know. But as far as TV stuff this week, we finished up this season of Lower Decks, and it ended on a cliffhanger. So it's probably not a spoiler. Those seasons will end on a cliffhanger. But it was a heck of a one. So I'm interested to see where they take that next year. And if you guys haven't watched it yet, this season was great. I really enjoyed it. It's just a fun show. Lower Decks is just a really fun show. And it seems like it's a little light on Star Trek because it's, you know, comedic, but it's not. It's, you know, they really get in deep with the lore and everything. So if you're a little Trekkie, it's fun to be like, oh my God, that's there. And I'm not. But that's, I think that's pretty much it for me this week. Brandon, what have you been doing?
As far as gaming is concerned, I am still playing Shovel Knight Treasure Trove. Because, you know, I'd been so immersed in all these, like, realistic, detail-heavy sci-fi games. I was like, you know what? I need to take a moment and go in the opposite direction. And I did a Mori and finished that. And so I decided, you know what? I've played the original Shovel Knight, but I've never played any of the related games in the DLC and stuff. So I decided to do that. And first and foremost, I forgot like how incredibly, just unbelievably fun the original Shovel Knight is. Because as soon as that game started up, I was like, oh, right. I remember I'm not just going through this again, like, you know, for completion's sake. I'm legitimately having fun here. Because it is. It's a legitimately fun game. I also forgot how legitimately, unbelievably hard it can be at certain points, especially when, you know, the checkpoints end up getting fewer and far between as you get going. So Treasure Trove, what it includes is it includes the original Shovel Knight, but that also comes with some additions, including one where you can literally gender swap the entire cast. And it's like, it's not just them changing pronouns. They actually went in and like made completely new sprites for all of the characters involved, including Shovel Knight. And it's just really cool that they actually went and did that and like made it very obvious that it's supposed to be a gender swap. It's just really cool, I think. But on top of that, they also have like all the other stuff. Like they have the DLC where you play as Plague Knight, the one where you play as Spectre Knight, and the one where you play as King Knight. And there's also the showdown mode as well.
Yeah, all of which play differently.
Yeah, play differently and are actually as hard, if not harder, than the original game. Because
I forget which one it is. Plague Knight like just controls in a way that's hard to get right away.
Yeah, well, Plague Knight actually isn't that difficult. He just, his attack, you know, like, because with Shovel Knight, you kind of take for granted the fact that, you know, he has that shovel and he can bounce. Plague Knight cannot bounce. Plague Knight's entire move base is based around throwing explosives of various kinds. And then, you know, having, like, a specific ability where they can, like, super jump, more or less. And that's their whole move base. Spectre Knight is hard to do because Spectre Knight essentially has they have like two different kinds of moves. One of them is they can run up walls.
I think that's the one I'm thinking of where it's like, you don't really play it like a normal platformer and that's the thing that trips you up easily.
Yeah. And on top of that, they've also got this, move that kind of, it's like where they can like, it's kind of hard to describe, but it's like a dash move where they can attack like enemies or things in the air. And it basically gives you like an extra jump or whatever. It's very difficult. And as for King Knight, well, King Knight is just, it's just lunacy is what that is. But yes, all these games are fantastic and they are absolutely worth playing. And it's only like $25. So it's not a whole lot of money. And it's a lot of quality for what you're getting. And also, it just makes me anxious for Mina the Hollower, because, you know, that's the next big Yacht Club game, and I want to play that as soon as it's available. But on top of that, I decided to buy a copy of Don't Nod's newest game, which is Jusant. And Jusant is a game where you are on this planet that has recently, like, either greatly reduced or lost all of its water. Because, like, the very first thing you see is, like, this huge desert environment that's littered with, like, shipwrecks and anchors and fish skeletons and all this stuff. And it's like, something has happened to this people's water. And you're playing this individual who, the whole point of the game is that you're climbing this rocky tower, basically. That's the whole game. You're climbing up using, you know, rocks and, you know, previously put in like ladder pieces, stairs. You have a rope that you use that you can use to sort of like anchor yourself in place, as well as various pistons that you can use to, well, you get three of them basically to plunge into the rock face so that you can, you know, if you jump up, you can sort of keep yourself in that area because you're going over like these wide chasms. And basically, yeah, that's what you're doing. And as you're doing it, you're coming across all these like old houses and buildings and, you know, stores and stuff that were built into the rock face. And then through there, you'll find things like, you'll find like old relics, letters that people and notes people left, journal pieces. You'll occasionally come across these what look like conch shells that you can use that will simulate like the sounds of like the particular area that you're in. Like if you're in an area that was like a restaurant, you'll pick it up and you'll hear like the sounds of like, you know, clinking silverware and cooking and people eating and stuff like that. And it is incredibly fascinating is how I'm going to say it. Because first of all, the actual climbing mechanic is very addictive. It's not like, you know, with a, it's not like what happens with, you know, with Uncharted, where it's like you're just, it's like, it's the whole climbing mechanic is based around like using the shoulder buttons to get your grip on a particular hand. So like reaching up and then gripping with the right hand, you got to like reach up and then hit the right trigger. Then you got to do the left one with the left trigger and, you know, on and on and on and on. There's like a mechanic involving like, you know, your endurance. And once you get to a point, you'll have to like, you know, sort of let your arms rest for a minute. You're not really in danger of dying in this game because you're basically, as soon as you get to like a climbing area, you automatically like anchor to the whatever entry point that is there that you need to be there. But you, there are like things where it's like, if you get it wrong, you're basically like, you have to like redo the whole sort of redo like the section you were trying to climb. Not like, you know, you like you fall off and get teleported back. No, it's just, you're still hanging by the place you're anchored to and you just sort of have to climb back up. But, it is an incredibly fascinating game. It's very enjoyable and it's got some really fascinating world building too. There's like this whole question of like, okay, what happened to this place's water? How long has it been since the water disappeared? And it's just, it's interesting is what I'll say. But, other than that, books, you know, usually I'm reading, I've been reading, A Clockwork Orange by Anthony Burgess. Have you guys ever seen the movie?
Yeah, it's been a while though. I don't remember all of it.
Okay. Yeah, first of all, the movie, it's a great movie, but there are parts of it that are legitimately hard to watch. Not because it's boring, but because of holy shit, does that stuff get dark sometimes. But so if you remember in the movie, it's basically about this guy named Alex who is like with his three friends, his droogs, as he calls them, because they're like a gang of juvenile delinquents who are basically going around and just doing awful shit, you know, just for whatever. They're robbing people, you know, causing random violence, sexual assault, you know, fun things. But what happens is that at some point his friends rat him out because Alex is just that unpleasant of a figure. And he ends up getting captured by the government, and the government decides they're going to put him under a type of what they call the Ludovic therapy or Ludovic technique, where they basically give him type chemicals that will make him measure. And the one thing they do is they like pry his eyes open with like hooks. And there's like a doctor constantly putting drops into his eyes to keep him moistened while they make him watch like footage of like World War II and the Holocaust and stuff like that. And playing like Beethoven in the background, because like the big part of it is that Alex, despite the fact he's a juvenile delinquent, he really likes Beethoven. And basically what happens is and they reprogram him into basically a robot, more or less, where he's constantly victimized by the society that he himself was victimizing. Well, the reason I'm saying all this is the book is it like the movie and the book more or less coalesce pretty easily. Like there's definitely some changes that they do, not so much for artistic reasons, but for the sake that there are parts of it in the book that are just plain unfilmable. But what makes the book unique is that, and they give like little tastes of it in the movie, but in the book, Alex tells the whole story in this very odd sort of dialect that's called Napsat. And it's essentially like a mixture of like sort of, you know, Cockney English slang with bits of like Russian thrown in, because the implication is that the UK and the world of A Clockwork Orange sort of got absorbed into the communist bloc at some point. And because of this, he tells it in like, he tells the whole story in this sort of very unusual dialect where he comes up with like these completely unusual like slang terms and things that there are parts of it still scholars like debating like what certain words actually are supposed to mean. Like, for example, in the beginning of it, he's in this bar that serves what's called Milk Plus, which is it's a bar that serves milk that has been infused with stuff like chemical like synthetic mescaline and adrenochrome and stuff like that. But he refers to it in things like synth mesc, that's synthetic mescaline, and drena, you know. And it's all this other stuff too. It's really fun. It's funny to read, and it's just weird because it you would think like with all of this weird like, you know, this weird slang, it would be hard to read, but it's actually not. It's like, because there's a lot of context clues around that will, you know, give you an idea of like what he's actually telling you. And the thing is, like, after the deprogramming, the programming thing happens, he starts talking in like regular English.
Huh.
Yeah. But it's very reading, but like much like with the movie, there are parts of it that are very hard to read because Alex is a legitimately nasty character and he does some legitimately awful things during the course of that book. And yeah, I've been reading that. Really, just last but not least, just that, like I said, Weather needs to make up its friggin' mind. Right. You know, is it going to be cold today, or are we going to have it suddenly shoot up into like 82 or something in like the middle of the afternoon, only for it to plummet back down into the 30s? Like, come on, get it together. But anyway. All right. Anyway, with that, it is now time to move on. In case anybody wants anything they wanted to add before we move on. Anybody?
Nope.
All right. Well, then it's now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And I want to ask you guys something. What is the most expensive meal that you've ever had? Like, you've gone to a restaurant and just paid out the ass for it.
It was probably something at Harry Carey's.
That checks. What about you, Chris?
I don't know. Nothing that I've paid for. Usually if it's an expensive meal, it's like with my parents or something like that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Then I don't know it. I don't follow up on the check.
Yeah, I don't. I honestly don't blame you.
It'd be like a couple of pizzas or something like that. Like, you know, whatever, something like that, take out.
Yeah. Well, the reason I'm asking that is because we've all, like, sort of, you know, over the time that I've done this show, I've occasionally talked about food, and I've talked about, like, the very expensive type of dishes occasionally. When I talked about the dinner of the three emperors, which was famous for being the most expensive meal of its time, and arguably still is, even by modern monetary standards. But one of the things about a lot of like high class, like what they call haute cuisine, is that Some of it you honestly wonder yourself, like, okay, I'm eating this. Why the hell does this cost so much? You know, like, for example, pate, for example. Now, you can get, like, really cheap pate now. It's not that difficult. But there's also, like, kinds of pate that are very expensive. There's also fish roe, for example. You know, fish eggs. There's very cheap varieties of fish eggs you can get, but then there's also beluga caviar, which is, like, super-duper expensive. Or truffles. That's another example. But,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. The reason, sometimes, as far as expense is concerned, it's mostly bullshit. It's like, you know, they sort of play it up, and they sort of like, yeah, this is, you know, it's super rare and expensive, and it's the height of elegance, and it's like, it's like a piece of steak with some gold leaf on it. Like, yeah, this is bullshit. But there are dishes where it's legitimately expensive, and the reason it's expensive is because, well, it's because, like, not it, the preparation is can be, like, really labor-intensive, or in the case I'm going to be talking about, actually requires, like, a very specialized piece of equipment for it to work. So today we're going to be talking very briefly about a little dish that came out of the Victorian era over in France, because, you know, that's usually where this come, where all this stuff comes from. It's called canard à la presse, or in English, pressed duck. And it's one of those things where it's like, okay, I have like three emotions to it. I have at first confusion, then revulsion, and then I don't know. I kind of want to eat that, and I'll explain why. Okay, so pressed duck, as you can obviously guess, involves a duck. Usually, preferably one that is young and relatively plump. Now, obviously, when you're fixing to have a duck, and you got a live duck, and you're going to eat duck, you got to kill the duck, right? And usually when they kill the duck, what do they usually do? Well, they just go, they just give it the old, you know, the old snick or the old choppa-choppa. Not so with pressed duck. No, in this case, you have to asphyxiate the duck, which is already kind of troubling in of itself, but let's go with it. All right, so then the duck is then, so the duck is then killed and it's ready for, you know, slaughter and processing. Okay, so you got the duck carcass, everything's ready to go. Well, the first thing that happens is that the duck itself is then partially roasted. All right? All right? Then the liver is removed where it is then ground up and seasoned. We'll tell you why in just a moment. You're going to find out. And then the legs and the breasts, and usually the wings, sometimes the wings, not always, but usually just the duck, the legs and the breasts are removed so that they can be broiled. They're going to be put on a grill or a roaster somewhere where they can be, you know, cooked up a bit more. Okay, so you got the duck, legs and breasts are removed so that they can be broiled. So what do you then do with the remaining, you know, which is the meat, the bones, the skin, and everything that's still in there? Well, that's where that specially piece of equipment I mentioned comes in. They bring out this thing that essentially looks like a large wine press, all right? It's a large wine, it's a contraption that's sort of bell-shaped, all right? And there's like a large crank at the top, and there's like a little spigot at the end of it, all right? So what they do is they take the duck, the rest of the duck carcass, they put it underneath this bell, and then they start spinning the crank. And within that bell is a, well, it's a press, like a wine press. So it's slowly going down, slowly, slowly pressing and crushing the duck carcass, trying to extract all of the blood and juices that are in the carcass. That extract is then thickened in a saucepan and then cooked with the piece, the ground up pieces of that duck's liver, you know, that I mentioned earlier, some butter and some cognac. And then, after all that's done, they take the duck breasts and they chop it up and the rest of the meat, they chop it up in these little pieces. They put it alongside the two duck legs that have been broiled. And then they add to the sauce that they've made with with bits of foie gras, port wine, Madeira, lemon, some salt and pepper to taste. And then all of it is poured over the duck. And that is duck a la presse. It is a surprisingly not that complicated, but it is one of those things where you have to really be trained how to do it correctly. Because mostly, not so much the cooking part, but the sauce part, because it is really easy to mess up the sauce. Because the sauce is literally made table side.
Oh.
Yeah, over like a burner and a pan, and there's like, it's like it has to happen very quickly because it's happening over high heat, and because if you don't do it just right, you can completely screw it up. But yeah, that is duck a la presse, one of the most expensive things you can usually find in so-called high-class restaurants, and that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. And I'm not going to lie, as weird and revolting as it sounds, I kind of want to try it. At least just once. But yeah, so with that, it is now time for the show proper. And as always, with the show proper, we talk about starting off with our assholes of the week. And our first has to do with the ongoing war in Gaza. Because the largest refugee camp in Gaza was shrunk by the IDF.
Yep.
Yeah.
And their go-to with Israeli, the military, is just, there was a Hamas person in there, so we had to kill all these people to get them. And there's, like, no way that they confirm, like, oh, we got this person. Mm. So it's just, like, the most stupid way of justifying any of this.
Mm-hmm.
So much so as I think there was video of them just burning down olive trees, and people were like, what, are there Hamas terrorists in the trees now?
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing? Yeah, this was the largest refugee camp in Gaza that just... Mm-hmm. These are all citizens.
Yeah.
Many kids involved in this, and it's so much so that just the people had to line up the bodies in rows, covered them in white sheets to try to figure out what all happened here. In the aftermath kind of stuff. And so much so that, even the Biden administration is finding it hard to be like, unapologetically supportive of them at this point. Yeah. They're very much like, seems inevitable that they're going to, call for a ceasefire.
Yeah.
And it's like, when you've fucked up that much, that, your most ardent supporters are calling, we're looking to call for a ceasefire.
Yeah.
And you're seeing the far right here very much and around the world trying to label all the protesters as Nazis. So much so that, people are like, oh, was it Bill Maher's like, oh, you guys criticize, all the khaki wearing dudes in Charlottesville, but now you are them. And it's like, Nope. One of these people, one of these groups is
not like the other.
Yeah, protesting for people's rights to live.
Yeah.
And not to stop a statue from being torn down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which that statue is no longer there. It was melted down into slag.
Yeah.
Nice.
And you can tell the people that did it were having fun because they took pictures of like the face that was cut off.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, this is what they want to do to your heritage. And it's like, no.
That thing only lasted barely 4 years. So.
Yeah, it's like this is
like an annoying orange has lasted longer than that.
Yeah, but yeah, there it's like been like what 7,600 people killed at least the last time I saw a number on this, and Israel TV is just labeling them all as terrorists, and it's like, no, that's not how that works.
No,
and I believe even at this point, people that lived in Gaza that immigrated to Israel to work, that they have to go through all the security checks and all that, have been sent back to Gaza, just expelled out of Israel. And it's like, good job, guys.
It's just a hot mess.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, initially you could see the point of what they were doing, but then you see quickly like, no, this this is just genocide they're trying to do here.
Yeah.
Because they've blown up like ambulances, been like, oh, there's Hamas in them. And it's like, where? Provide any proof you have of this.
Yeah. So yeah, that is ongoing. And I know it's hard to talk about because you feel completely, utterly powerless and dejected. Because it feels like there's absolutely nothing you can do about it. But we do have this other story, which is Sam Bankman-Fried was found guilty on all 7 charges in his FTX case.
Yeah, there may be some more charges coming in.
Mm-hmm.
I believe some federal charges, something like that, that may happen in the next few months.
Mm-hmm.
But he was found guilty on each of these 7 charges, and it was only like 5 hours of deliberation, so...
Yeah.
It was not very hard for them to figure this out, it seems like. So, he's going to be going to prison for a long time, potentially up to like 115 years since sentencing, but who knows what the sentencing's going to be, but probably for quite a while.
I hope so.
Yeah.
And now for a sort of follow-up to a really just horrific story. A little while back, there was a man in Illinois who stabbed a young boy to death and his mom. He was recently just charged with a hate crime on top of everything else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And rightfully so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So hopefully he goes to prison for the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't deserve anything else.
No. So yeah, that is those are the assholes of the week. Rather dark, but we do have some really good news to follow that up with. Our heroes of the week are the United workers who have reached a tentative deal with General Motors to mark the potential end of their strike against the big 3 automotive manufacturers. And among other things, this is going to involve them raising the wages of everyone, including non-union members.
Yeah. Which is good news all around.
Yeah.
I don't know when they're going to do votes to, lock in these deals, but it seems pretty good for all 3 deals that they got. So hopefully that all goes through. And then get back to not losing money anymore. Like they've been complaining about it. It's like, well, there's a solution to these problems of losing money. Because people aren't doing the work.
Mm.
It's called make deals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not like the AMPTP, like, this is our final and last offer. It's like, oh, they're going to take that seriously. All your other final offers.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there you go.
So that's good. And once again, showing that once again, momentum is on the side of labor right now. And this is going to keep going. And we got another latest story to talk about just a little bit later. We'll get to that. Anyway, yes, that was the end of the show proper, and now begins the proper show proper. And our first story for the night is that House Representative George Santos was up against a vote to expel him from the House, which he survived. Barely, but he survived it.
This time.
Yes, because of 31 Dems who voted against expelling him.
Yeah. And yeah, this, let's see, the resolution failed to gain the required 2/3 vote. They couldn't even get a simple majority, with the final vote being 179-4, expulsion and 213 against. And yeah, like 24 Republicans voted for expelling him, and 31 Dems voted against it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. People being like, oh, I got to let the process play out. And it's like, okay, you need him in jail first before you expel him for the things he's done, I guess. And it's like, all right, whatever.
Well, the other reason is that he's just a really good, like, you know, as long as he's there, he's like the perfect anchor around the GOP's necks. The Democrats can just point to him and say, see?
Oh, he's a useful idiot for the GOP. Yeah,
exactly.
Because that seat is largely safely red.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't really do anything
useful
for the most part.
No, not really. Speaking of the House, they also voted for an Israel aid bill that would be paid with massive cuts to the Internal Revenue Service and no aid to Ukraine. Because, of course.
Yeah.
Just
Yeah, $14.5 billion of military aid for Israel.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, would pay for that by stripping a bunch of funding from the IRS. You know, in that whole 87,000 IRS workers conspiracy that the GOP likes, even though one that's not for, they'd be like, oh, they're going to hire 87,000 people to go after you, small time people. It's like, no, that's for the rich people. But yeah, this isn't going to go anywhere because the Senate has already said we're not doing this. You know, Mitch McConnell's already even gone against this, saying it's, you know, with stuff like Ukraine, it's much cheaper to do these aid bills versus, you know, dealing with the efforts should, you know, Ukraine lose.
Yeah.
And dealing with Russia and all the shit they're going to do.
Oh, yeah.
It's like the Cold War wasn't cheap.
Nope.
So anything they can spend to keep them from having to invest that much into their dealings with the Eastern Europe and Russian areas are going to be much more useful now.
Yeah.
That's why he's not, you know, stupid people, you know, in the House. Mitch McConnell, he's at least smart enough for that.
Yeah. Anyway, and going on with more political stuff, the Senate, we're going from the House to the Senate, they have confirmed three new military officers in spite of the fact that Tommy Tuberville's quote-unquote blockade continues because he's an asshole.
Yeah, and many people in the GOP are tired of his antics. So they're trying to find ways to get him to stop blocking now almost 400 nominees. But yeah, they got, let's see, who are the new people that they voted in? Let's see, Admiral Lisa Franchetti to lead the Navy. General David Alvin to be the Chief of Staff of the U.S. Air Force.
Yeah.
Lieutenant General Christopher Mahoney to serve as Assistant Commandant for the U.S. Marine Corps. Franchetti is the first woman to serve as a Pentagon Service Chief and hold a seat on the Joint Chiefs of Staff. So that's great news. But yeah, Tuberville is just basically on this weird campaign to confirm that he is the dumbest person in the Senate.
Yep. Yeah.
So yeah, that's
another way to put it.
Yeah. Because he has this grudge against Pentagon policy involving abortion and reproductive care.
Or at least that's the excuse that he gives.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so that happened. Moving on to something slightly more lighthearted. Cedar Fair and Six Flags are merging in a major amusement park deal. So they're basically going to become one company.
Yeah. Cedar Fair essentially would gain the bulk of the shares and the control of the company, but it'll be named Six Flags. In the end, they will own amusement parks across 17 U.S. states and three countries. The other ones are Canada and Mexico. 27 amusement parks, 15 water parks, and 9 resort properties in the U.S. And yeah, this company will be worth $3.5 billion. And yeah, I know of Six Flags because they bought a local park here in Ohio called Geauga Lake that was a pretty cool park. They came in, bought it, and, you know, started putting in, like, their DC coasters and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And retrofitting stuff for that. And then fucked off a few years later after it didn't, like, grow substantially, I guess. And then the park closed, like, 10 years later because of all that shit that went on.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's the whole thing. And, yeah, this is probably likely because of COVID's effect on, you know, park attendance kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Basically. People, you know, outside of immediate areas where these parks are at probably don't want to travel as much to these kind of places. Yeah, like they had I've only been getting like minor 1% increases in attendance over the past year or so. So they're hoping to kind of have more funding to invest in all these parks and maybe get things back on track for them. But yeah, interesting deal for the amusement park industry. So
yeah.
Or unless you're, you know, owned by, you know, Universal Studios or Disney, you probably had a bit of a challenge trying to keep things moving in a positive direction.
Mm.
So yeah, there you go.
Yeah. All right. So with that, we move on to the next story, which is that, well, this is all the way down in Colombia. So Pablo Escobar, he was a notorious drug kingpin who was killed in a shootout with police in 1993. But he still has a shadow on the Colombian government, the Colombian nation, and the Colombian people. Among other reasons, because he had a bunch of, like, that he kept as pets around his estate. And after he died, a bunch of them kind of broke out and sort of adapted to the wild. And one of them is he had a bunch of hippos that still roam Colombia to this day. And it's now gotten so bad that the Colombian government has announced that they're going to have to start culling them.
Yeah. Apparently it had about... There are about 169 of these right now,
mm-hmm.
Which is a lot. And, you know, as you can probably figure out, there's not many predators to them in Colombia. So
no.
So they are kind of free to fuck and make more of them.
Yep.
I guess this originally started with one male and three females that he owned.
Mm-hmm.
So they are fearful that, you know, without taking these kind of strong measures, they could, they say the population could boom to 1,000 individuals by 2035.
Yeah.
Which they definitely don't want, because hippos are, you know, some of the most dangerous animals.
Mm-hmm.
They're not things to fuck around with. Mm-hmm. And yeah, after his death in 1993, they relocated most of the other animals in the collection, but not the hippos, because they were too difficult to transport.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, free from any natural predator, the rising population posed an environmental challenge. So they are looking to start this new phase to control the population, involving three strategies: sterilization, relocation, and ethical euthanasia.
Mm-hmm.
And they are, you know, planning to deal with all three parts of that to make this work.
Mm.
So yeah, that's gonna involve probably some fun times.
Oh yeah. Because hippos are extremely dangerous. I don't think people really understand, like, how dangerous they are.
Yeah, despite their size, they are very fast.
Very fast, very deadly. They can tear you to pieces. They are surprisingly aggressive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're fairly ornery, aren't they?
Oh yeah. So yeah, next up, in another, example of hockey ain't no joke, Adam Johnson, who was a hockey player, died after a skate cut his neck during a game in an England league. Yeah.
Yeah. He used to play in the NHL. This happens like every maybe 10, 15 years. It's not a very common thing, but it does happen.
Oh, yeah.
I think the last time it happened on during an actual NHL game,
mm-hmm.
Which, mm-hmm. you know, is one of those things where it spreads in an unfortunate way to mm-hmm. show people this stuff. Yeah, he was playing in Sheffield, England, a former NHL player, so... a person of note.
Mm.
But yeah, video footage appeared to show opposing players skate strike Johnson in the neck, that caused them to just, you know, stop the game, just empty, get people out of the arena, and
mm-hmm.
get medical personnel to see if they could do anything. But he was taken to hospital and pronounced dead.
Yep.
29 years old,
mm-hmm.
very young. So yeah, sad to see, and it's kind of reinvigorated calls for some sort of neck guard on hockey players, something to prevent this, even though it's kind of a rare thing, but it's still, you know, something worthwhile.
Yeah.
To look into. So, but this is hockey. We're talking about it. Probably wasn't that long ago that they did not use helmets. So, that's a fairly recent thing in like the last probably 60 years or so that they started wearing helmets, I think. So yeah, fun times.
Yep. So yeah, hockey is no joke. And then another sports news, Kimberly Garcia. She ran a 20-kilometer walk. Well, I say ran. She did a 20-kilometer walk race, and she thought that she had set a world record, but it turns out that the course was actually just too short.
Yeah, this was at part of the Pan American Games.
Mm-hmm.
And she had thought that she beat the world record by about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But they had to annul the results because of a measuring problem, as they figured out that the race was about 3 kilometers short, which is, you know, caused lots of problems because it's like, how the fuck did you miss 3 kilometers on this track here? And yeah, you know, she was not the only one that broke the record. There were about 10 other people that also got under the world record time, which was 1:23:49. So an hour 23 minutes and 49 seconds. Yeah, 11 others seemingly also finished below the world record, so it was sort of a big deal, but yeah, this is some fucked up shit to do. To fuck up this bad, especially in a...
I mean, right, like, and in the days of GPS, I mean, that should be super easy for them to figure out.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, they're, you know, mapping out this huge course. It should be a thing that's like, making sure it's right, you know, double, triple checks, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That's going to be a big embarrassment on these, the Association of Pan American Athletes. That, or maybe it's not the Pan American Athletes, maybe it's the Pan American Games. Yeah, the organization. Yeah. Which is, yeah, that's fucked up. You got all these people excited about their times, and then they realize, like, no, this was all fake. Essentially, they wasted their time. For nothing. So yeah. Yeah, I guess they've also had other issues in this one with trash scattered outside competition venues in the 4 days following the opening ceremony. Threats of a strike from the private security company working the events, and a leak in the handball venue that cut matches short. So not a great time for this organization.
Oh yeah. No kidding, no kidding. So, yeah. Then we also have this story. And this one, this is like one of those, like, one round, and for a while people were suspecting that something like this was happening. But we finally were able to confirm it for real. An HBO executive used a fake Twitter account, well, fake Twitter accounts, to troll and harass TV critics.
Yeah, this exec at the time, I forget what role he had. But now he is the HBO and Max CEO and chairman, Casey Bloys, who this all got found out on Rolling Stone, published a big thing detailing the events in the lawsuit that was brought against the exec and HBO from a former employee, Sully Tamori, who claims to have been wrongfully terminated. And this stuff was all part of that lawsuit that they kind of delve into. Yeah, text messages between Bloys and Senior Vice President of Drama Programming, Kathleen McCaffrey, where they repeatedly discussed replying to critics who spoke negatively about HBO's series, including Perry Mason and Mayor of Easttown, using fake Twitter accounts, which have been verified as real things that they did say. And yeah, let's see. And then they got an executive assistant that was instructed to make a Twitter account for these purposes, which he did and attributed to the fake person, Kelly Shepard, a self-described vegan Texan mom. They sent tweets from this account at Bloy's request in response to critics' negative reviews.
Mm.
Additionally, said that he left anonymous comments on some Deadline articles in response to other users' negative remarks about HBO series and execs at Bloy's request. And it's like, how fucking thin-skinned are you? You're like, this guy in the Deadline comments is saying shit about HBO shows. We got to get back at him.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what the fuck?
Seriously.
And so, yeah, they're doing an event here, talking about shows they've got coming up, that kind of stuff. And, yeah, this guy was sort of talking about this here, saying, those of you who know me, you know that I'm a programming executive who's a very, very passionate who is very, very passionate about the shows that we decide to do, the people who do them, and the people who work on them. I want the shows to be great. I want people to love them. I want you all to love them. It's very important to me what you all think of the shows. So when you think of that mindset and then think of 2020 and 2021, I'm home, working from home, spending an unhealthy amount of time scrolling through Twitter. Mm-hmm. I come up with a very, very dumb idea to vent my frustration. It's like, yeah, no shit.
You know, I mean, he should just say, hey, my bad, and not try to explain it, because it's just more pathetic trying to explain it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The weird thing is, he goes on, is like, but I do apologize to people who are mentioned in the leaked texts. Obviously, nobody wants to be part of a story they have nothing to do with. But also, as many of you know, I've progressed over the past couple of years to using DMs. So now when I take issue with something in review or take issue with something I see, I DM many of you. Many of you are gracious enough to engage with me in a back and forth. I think that's probably a much healthier way to go about this.
Yeah. We'll
talk more about that. And you guys can ask me anything you want in the Q&A. I just wanted to put that out there. And it's like, oh boy, now you just DM people.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's not public in any way. And it's definitely not concerning to have like a CEO being like, why don't you like the show?
Yeah, seriously.
It's like, how about you sit in your fucking mansion where you're making millions of dollars and just shut the fuck up?
Seriously. Like you're like really that boring?
Yeah.
It's just more like crazy CEO behavior, like Elon Musk's kind of bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Elon Musk is on a whole other level because he's so rich that he never has to learn anything. He just says the dumbest shit possible with no filter.
Yeah.
And he's so rich, he never sees any consequences from any of it.
You know, well, there's rare times when he sees consequences, but those are usually minor.
The dents are so much money that none of us would ever see at any point, even combined with probably 20 people each of us know.
Yeah.
We never get anywhere close.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a small dent to him.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so yeah. And now for a story that really pissed some people off, including some people here on the show. Max standard ad-free plan is losing 4K as it becomes the $19.99 ultimate plan's main feature.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is bull crap.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like the shrinkflation of freaking streaming services.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, this tier was $16 a month. Mm-hmm. And you had, you know, I don't think everything was 4K. It was like whatever could support 4K was in 4K, but everything else was 1080p. And then also the three devices could stream simultaneously. Now that's two.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, now that's just weird as a thing. Yeah.
No more Dolby Atmos, which sucks for people who have home theaters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's like that kind of stuff where it's like, you might as well just raise the prices at this point. Yeah.
Right, because it's just, it's like, you know, the Red Hot Chili Peppers singing, give it away now. Mm-hmm. Nah, they're just going to take it away now, and keep all your prices the same.
Yep. Yeah.
It's really not going over well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess the other thing is the amount of offline downloads you could have in the app, which was 100 for the $20 tier, 30 for the standard, which is like, I guess it doesn't seem like that big of a deal. of a thing that most people
don't even know why they're limiting it. Yeah. Right? Why even count it? I don't think
Netflix does that.
No.
Because I just have it just download all of the I Think You Should Leave stuff so I can watch that whenever. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And like one episode of MST3K from their run that I watch every once in a while. Mac and me. I just watch that because it's funny. That's the only way I'll watch that movie.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
It's like stuff where I don't have to worry about being on an internet connection or a good one.
Mm.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's
And I mean, this matters for people who fly.
Yeah. It's good to have some stuff loaded up so you don't have to worry about it because even in-flight internet is not great. So, especially if you got kids, you're like, I just need to have the stuff on here so they shut up for a few hours.
Yeah, and not have to pay for the in-flight Wi-Fi because, ugh, that's annoying.
Yeah. But yeah, this is just dumb. Just raise the prices to what you want them to be and then move on.
Yeah.
Instead of shifting features around so that people that, especially would suck if you paid for the year based on these features and like, oh, that's not there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You guys just suck as much as all the other services.
Yep. Now for some good news. The production workers at Walt Disney Animation Studios have voted to unionize with IATSE. Yep.
Yep. Let's see. They voted, 93% of them voted in favor of this to join the Animation Guild. 63 out of 68. Yep. Neither of the parties files an objection. In 5 days, union will be certified and labor and management can begin bargaining a first contract.
Mm.
So yeah, I think they're the second of these production groups at Disney. Marvel's FX group was the first. So great news for those groups because those are some of the most shit on people at those companies.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, that's great news for them.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So that's happening. Once again, the momentum is on the side of labor and will continue to be so for some time. And now we're going on to probably noticed we are now very much in the entertainment portion of the show. We got this story, Hulu renews Futurama for 2 more seasons. So apparently it did so well that they decided to do 2 more.
As is tradition.
Yeah.
Futurama returns. And they're like, well, we're not going to stop this for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had 4 seasons on the first run.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you count the seasons on the second run.
Mm-hmm.
Because they took the movies and cut them up into episodes. And then...
Mm-hmm.
I can't figure out the amount of seasons there because
mm-hmm.
I think it was 8 and then now it's 11 and I don't understand the math.
Mm.
I looked at what it was on Wiki and it's like this doesn't match what it's on Hulu.
Mm.
Yeah.
So whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So as they even acknowledge in this article, the new order will bring the show to seasons 13 and 14 or 10 and 11 depending on how you break it down. Mm. So yeah, even they gave up. They're like whatever. Yeah. 2 more seasons.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's an additional 20 episodes. So that's cool. I've been jumping back through the Comedy Central run here and there. Just not a ton of time to devote just to that, but still going.
Yeah. Well, anyway, moving on from there. We got another Hulu story. Hulu is working on Prison Break series.
Yeah. That was that series that did really well for like 2 seasons, and then they did 2 more in the movie, and then they're like, all right, that's good for now. And then the Fox or whoever is like, we should bring that back for something.
Mm.
That never happens. And this time it seems like it's maybe more likely to happen.
Mm-hmm.
The co-creator and showrunner for Mayans MC is the one behind this new attempt at a new Prison Break show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that will be under the 20th Television brand. I guess they're going to just have the same characters, Michael Scofield and Lincoln Burrows, but not necessarily played by or is not expected to feature the characters. Okay. I was like, why would you feature the same characters and not just feature new characters? But who knows? But yeah, the original show was pretty good for those first two seasons.
Yeah.
Some very good stuff. So yeah, maybe they'll find something else, or I don't know why you can just do a new thing. It's not like there we have a shortage of prison shows.
Mm.
But yeah, there you go. That may happen.
All right. And now we're on for our trailers. First off, we got an official trailer plus is Echo.
Yeah, the first of the MCU shows that are is a TVMA for mm-hmm. mature audiences that you'll have to go to your Disney Plus, as they say here, set your Disney Plus profile to TVMA to stream.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be out January 10th. Disney Plus and Hulu. The Hulu is like a weird special arrangement where all episodes will be available on Hulu until April 9th. So you get 3 months to watch it. And then you have to pay for Disney Plus.
yeah.
But yeah, this is a spinoff of the, was it the Hawkeye show? I think Echo was a character in that where she is a deaf character who is also Native American. And I guess this will be sort of an origin story of sort, maybe with also modern stuff with her sort of being raised by Kingpin, played by Vincent D'Onofrio from the Netflix Daredevil stuff. So,
yeah,
that's pretty cool that they continue to have him on for that. And yeah, it looks like it's going to be fairly dark and violent. So,
oh yeah,
that's good to see, especially when they eventually get the Daredevil stuff going.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine he'll probably show up in here at some point.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But yeah, all of these episodes will be available on day one.
Mm-hmm.
People are like, this must be bad. It's like, maybe, I don't know.
We might. Yeah, maybe it is. We'll see.
Maybe it's good. Maybe they're just like, fuck it, we'll put them all out. Let's string it up, because who gives a shit about this one character?
Mm-hmm.
It's not like Loki.
Yeah. And we also got an official trailer for...
Yeah, the Fall Guy. This is... a stuntman movie of sorts, a ridiculous one, featuring Ryan Gosling and who is the other, what's her name? Emily Blunt.
Yeah.
Emily Blunt plays the director who's making this big budget action movie, and Ryan Gosling's the stuntman who's essentially the double for the world famous actor Tom Ryder with a Y in Tom and Ryder.
Yeah.
And he goes disappearing at some point, and she hates Ryan Gosling's character. I think it's some sort of fling thing they had back in the day, and he did something to piss her off. Mm. And so she's like, well, you're the only person that can save him for some reason. And yeah, he's like surprised constantly at the actual violence that he gets into as a result of trying to find this actor where... Maybe gets into shit he didn't think about, like maybe some organized crime stuff and all that. And yeah, gets to do a lot of ridiculous action stunts, and looks like it'd be a pretty fun movie. That'll be out March 1st. And yeah, that's that looks pretty good.
All right.
Well, I guess this is a movie version of a 1980s TV series of a similar idea. Mm-hmm. So, okay.
All right.
I would have guessed it if it didn't mention here.
Yeah. Yeah, well, anyway, and we also got an official trailer for FX's Shogun. This is a series that's based on James Clavell's famous novel. It's basically about, it's based on the story of William Adams, an Englishman who washed up on a shipwreck onto the shores of Japan. It's fascinating stuff.
Yeah, this looks pretty neat.
Mm-hmm.
For a show, it's got some good actors in here. Hiroyuki Sanada, which you may have seen in I forget what the HBO show with the robots theme park. He was in the second season of that when they went to the Japanese town.
Yeah,
That kind of thing. So He does some good work. Cosmo Jarvis, Anna Sawai. So,
mm-hmm.
some new talent. This looks pretty cool. It'll be out February 2024 on Hulu and FX.
Yeah.
It looks like it's not going to hold back on. So that looks
cool. Yeah. So, and finally, last but not least, we got ourselves a teaser trailer for Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, they said, like, what if we do more of that? And it's like, all right, you're just like the original movie series.
Mm-hmm.
But they kept going. Yeah, it takes place several generations after the end of the last movie, the trilogy, where, spoilers, the apes win.
Yeah.
They beat the humans and take over as the dominant species. And so, yeah, several generations in the future following Caesar's reign, in which apes are the dominant species. Let's see. Yeah. A new tyrannical ape leader builds his empire. One young ape undertakes a harrowing journey.
Mm-hmm.
It'll cause him to question all that he has known about the past, to make choices that will define a future for apes and humans alike.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this is not the same director as the previous movies. That was Matt Reeves. This is Wes Ball, who mm-hmm. did the Maze Runner movies.
Yep.
Which I think were all right, what they were. But yeah, this has some neat talent to it. William H. Macy is in this for some reason. He survives the ape apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
They got Freya Allen, which you know from The Witcher.
Yeah.
That's Ciri. So, yeah, see, we got some decent talent. This is neat to go into, like, the ape civilization now,
mm-hmm.
which is what some of those later Planet of the Apes movies did.
Yeah.
Or no. They kind of dipped around back and forth. Some in the future, some in the past. So,
mm-hmm.
Those are weird movies beyond the first one. The first one's a classic, and the rest are for perverts.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the recent trilogy is like all three were good.
Yeah. All right. And with that, I do believe we got ourselves a show, folks. That we do. We got ourselves a show. So I would like to remind all of our listeners to get a question, comment, or want us to read on letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for it in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of tune. Of Unscripted Shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or basically any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. And if there's one that's new, don't worry. We'll be on there eventually because we're just that desperate. Yeah, so we're going to go ahead and wind it down here. Thank you, Chris and Teresa, for joining me on this tonight. If you have liked what you have heard, please do not hesitate to share us with your friends, your family, your casual acquaintances, your mortal enemies, or even just random ass people on the street. And if you do that last one, make sure that you film yourself doing it, because, you know, people generally really like it when you run up to them and grab them by the shoulders and scream random things at their faces. You know, it's really funny. In fact, it's really cool. It's the latest thing. You should give it a shot for us specifically. We're not going to do it because, you know, we're not stupid, but you might be. But anyway, we're going to go ahead and wind it down here. See you all next week. And yeah, hopefully I didn't just completely ruin our reputation with that last bit. Bye!